The Law of Life, Karma. This is Barry Long speaking. Unless you are prepared to be more responsible for your life than most of the Earth's population, it may be unwise for you to listen to this tape. Either it will be meaningless to you, or your life will start to change for better or for worse. The change, if not for better, should only be temporary. But you will know why it has happened and how to correct it, which is more than most people ever know or learn. I am going to be speaking about the mystery of life or the secret of living, which then will be neither a secret nor a mystery to you. The price of such knowledge, such real knowledge, is responsibility. The point is that whatever happens in your life after you hear what I'm going to say, it will be you who is responsible for it, not Barry Long, not this recording or any other person or event outside yourself. Why will be clearly stated. But by then it will be too late to change your mind. You won't be able to back out, to go back to where you are now. You won't be quite the same person again. You will already be more responsible for your life than ever before. You will know what living is about. You will understand what you have to do. You will know how to do it. And you will know what to expect and whom to blame if you don't. Are you being true in your life? Really being true? True to yourself? Are you living with someone who makes you unhappy? Are you keeping someone who uses you and doesn't love you? Do you dislike or hate your job? Do you long for love, but are no longer vulnerable to love because you're frightened of being hurt? Do you ache to be free? Are you living with a partner you don't love and making the best of it for the sake of comfort, convenience, or the children? Are you putting up with whatever is depressing your joy of life because you're afraid or scared of change? If the answer is yes to any of those questions, you are not being true. You're not being true to yourself, to life. And even if things do change, you won't be happy for long. Everyone is trying to be true in their way, true to somebody, an idea or something, and it doesn't work. All it does is lead you to not being true to yourself, and that is unhappiness. Why doesn't it work? Why can't it work? Because it's impossible to be true to anyone or anything until you are true to yourself. Then you are true to everyone and all things, and your problems begin to disappear. Isn't that the most extraordinary thing you've ever had put to you as a practical possibility? I'll repeat it. When you are true to yourself, the problems in your life start to vanish. To be true, you have to discover and start to live under the law of life, sometimes called the law of karma. The world knows very little about this law and understands it less. The reason is that it's a conscious law, the conscious law, in fact the one and only real law. It governs full-time the lives of the relatively few conscious, responsible individuals on the planet. And it is available at any time to help those who are prepared and already endeavoring to become more conscious and responsible in their lives. The karmic law is practically unknown in the world, because it applies or functions only in the present, now, without reference to the past. The world's laws, on the other hand, are unconscious laws, and so are all the moral codes and commandments that men and women impose on themselves and each other, or try to live by. Such unconscious laws are laws founded on the past, past experience. They depend wholly on evidence or rules of the past to establish who is guilty or not guilty in the present. As it is impossible for anything in the past to be true in the present, unconscious laws are only relatively true, approximately true, and they result in compromise. Compromise is trying to make the best of things in the present circumstances. The effect of these laws is to cause conflict in the person, at best the conflict of conscience, and in the world, division and discord which we see all around us. Such unconscious laws arise from unconscious thinking. Unconscious thinking is thinking based on good and bad and right and wrong. Good and bad, or right and wrong, are the world's two fundamental unconscious notions. Almost without exception, unconscious laws and beliefs govern the lives of the entire population of the Earth, the 5 billion persons who independently and collectively demonstrate by their daily lives that they are not yet able to be responsible for their destiny as the people of this planet or for themselves. If you are unhappy with your life, you are avoiding responsibility for it. You are unconscious. You are obligated or considering something or someone and are not being true to yourself, to life. To wake up and come alive, you have to throw yourself on the law of life. You have to refuse to compromise any longer with what is making you unhappy. You have to quit or separate or break with the past. You have to take action. The action itself may well change the situation or the other person and end the compromise so that you can be new in yourself and continue. But you must break with the old, and not allow it to bind you and blind you again. If you are hanging on to a situation for the sake of someone else, you are deceiving yourself and achieving nothing. When you are unhappy, you are not yourself, and when you are not yourself, you are no real good to anyone, your job, your partner, or your child. You will infect them all with your unhappiness, your discontent, and they will suffer and not be themselves. You may think it doesn't show and that you are getting away with it, martyring yourself. But the fact is you are being dishonest, and that sort of dishonesty doesn't rob, doesn't steal. It just spoils what should be good. When you feel compelled to consider another and think you're being unselfish, you are merely considering yourself. You consider the person as an extension of yourself, and you do them a disservice because they are not that. If you love them, you do not have to consider them. You only consider what you do not love. A mother who loves her child does not consider it. Her love knows what the child needs, and she acts from there. If breaking with someone or something makes you think it will be hard on the child you are taking with you or have to support, you are mistaken. It may be hard on you for a while, making do for you both in the world. But as long as you love the child and share your life with it in love, the child will be happy. You will be happy together. You are happy in any circumstances with the one you love who loves you. You will manage. You will get through by making the new life an adventure together. If you are being true, and not self-indulgent, vindictive, or resentful, the child will understand and enjoy playing its part. But above all, you will be free of the old deadening grip of compromise in your life, and you will be ready for the new. The new always comes. The law of life will be true to you if you are true to yourself. Sometimes, to be true to yourself is to stay put where you are. But to be true in such a case, consciously true, means you can no longer be miserable as you used to be. Either you will be surrendered to the situation because it can't be changed. Surrender is the conscious acceptance of what can't be changed at this moment, but may be changeable in the next. Or you will be working consciously full-time to make the situation right. Either way, you won't complain, doubt, or become depressed, because you'll know what you are doing. You'll be responsible. When you do break with a person or situation, money can be scarce. But that will be looked after. You'll get through. Have you ever known a time when you didn't get through? Everyone gets through. Everyone has some money. All you need in the first instance is food, warmth, and shelter. Get your priorities right. Don't want more than you can have now. Use what you have, what is provided. You are not going to stay where you are. You are getting free. You're not free yet. You're in the process. It is moving every day. Don't look anxiously ahead. Don't be afraid. Life will look after you then, if you are true now. Now is what is important. But do what you know you must. Don't lay about. Be alert. Stay as conscious as you can. Life can't suddenly provide everything at once. It was you who strangled it while you compromised. Enough for now is enough. Trust in life. It knows what you need. And as you stick at being true, life will provide what you need more and more. Watch life work. Watch the miracle unfold in front of you as a letter of opportunity has slipped through the door. Your eye is drawn to just the right advertisement, or someone makes a casual suggestion that opens up a whole new prospect for you. Don't fall back into old patterns. Don't get stuck again in the same situation. Be vulnerable, but only to love and to what you know is right in the moment, nothing else. Learn from being true to yourself how to tell the difference. Don't blame. Don't accuse. Don't tell your sad story. Complain as little as you can. Be new. This is a fresh start. If you acknowledge the old by talking about it, you carry it with you. Don't think about it either. It's gone, finished. And if it turns up again in the form of a person or some other reminder, don't go along with the old emotion it excites. Pause. Hold to your newness. Be true to yourself. The world will always be trying to drag you down, to drag you backwards. And its most powerful weapon is the past. Don't try to please anyone, mother, father, family, friends. Be true. Don't give in to the tears and emotional demands of others. Yield only to love. Love does not demand, except inside yourself where it demands that you be true to the new state, the new you. And in those times when you seem to lose that state and clarity, don't despair. Don't be discouraged. Don't doubt or think it was all imagination. Hold the pain, the isolation, the confusion, the depression. Be the pain. Don't let it out. Feel your strength underneath. Don't think. Wait. Be patient. Resist trying to work out anything in the past. There's nothing to work out. You've done it, or it's happened. You've worked it out by taking action. Let it be. Don't analyze. Don't feel sorry for yourself. Don't look back. And don't feel sorry for others. That's backtracking. Leave it to life. Be as still as you can. The disturbance and darkness will pass. The lightness and rightness will come again. Just hold. Be true. You are not suppressing, you are dissolving. It is the law of life in you, dealing with the weight of the past in you, reducing the old you, the old problem. You've done what you had to do by quitting, separating or breaking with the past. You did it to bring life back into your life. The pain you feel is only the past dying, not the present. Life, the present, the new, will not let you down. Let me say what happens when you do what I have just described, that is, when you are brave and real enough to break with compromise and consciously throw yourself onto the law of life. You call for justice, real justice. You exert your sacred right as a human being to appeal direct to life for immediate justice. This is a right man has forgotten he possesses. You ask to be judged now, not as to whether you are guilty or not guilty, as the world will certainly judge you, but whether you are being true to yourself, true to life, in what you are doing. By your conscious action, you ask direct for life's assistance. To avoid such directness and honesty in their lives, the unconscious masses have invented the indirect ritual of praying for help. These prayers use words, thoughts, and emotions as substitutes for the direct action of self-sacrifice, by which you end compromise and rid yourself and life of unhappiness. The action of putting yourself, your life on the line, is faith. But this is not the popular faith of belief or supplicatory prayer. It is the faith that moves mountains, the mountain of difficulties that seems to loom over you when you break with compromise. Remember, you are life. That life in you is meant to be free. And because you are being true to life, consciously taking responsibility for its happiness, you have nothing to fear. The mountain is only your fears. The law of life, or karmic law, is not about penalties. It does not hand out punishments or exemplary deterrents. It is there for the truth, for man and woman who would be true. And like the truth, its justice is extremely simple. At the man's or woman's own direct request, it provides the worldly circumstances appropriate to freeing him or her from the injustice of the situation. So, in such a crisis as I've been describing, in which you remain conscious of the law of life, the circumstances you need to help you in the world, and to help you to remain being true, will occur. Problems will gradually, or even instantly, diminish. But if you are not true and invoke the law, meaning if you just want change, excitement, or to gain something other than freedom from the misery of not being true to yourself, you'll attract circumstances that make you miserable to enable you to be more true. In other words, there will be more problems than there are now, or those you have now will last longer or get worse. Understand that you don't have to be true in the world, only true in yourself. One is not the other, but the inner controls the outer. The whole world of persons of which you and I are parts is robbing, deceiving, exploiting, and misleading each other under the guise of commerce, government, society, caring, and respectability, and yet every individual inside themselves yearns to give. No one can be honest in the world for long, because everyone in the world is forced to be dishonest. All are compelled to compromise, to make a deal for personal comfort or security with someone or something. You can only finally be honest, true and uncompromising with yourself. That alone, that inner consciousness, will change the world. To be fully conscious and responsible for oneself is every human being's right and destiny. It means being consciously and voluntarily answerable to the karmic law every moment of your life, and living the law as your own self-knowledge. Such individuals do not try to hide from the law or ignore it when that would suit their apparent advantage. Any transgressions they know will have to be paid for, and they willingly watch and accept life's adjudication in order that they may know themselves better, be more true to life, and be more free. These men and women live and act out of the knowledge that this law is the supreme justice, the justice of being made to be oneself by oneself. Consequently, and this will be your experience every time you are true, there is no feeling of being imposed on or alienated as occurs with the world's laws, no feeling of coercion or inferiority. This justice resides in one's own will. It is one's own law, one's own integrity, one's own self. Such men and women are not only conscious but responsible, conscious of life and responsible for it. Compromise and conflict disappear from their being, and in the otherwise divided external world, the circumstances of their lives work together to serve their destiny or life purpose. On the other hand, to be unconscious is to be oblivious or ignorant of the presence and power of this law, as most of humanity is. Such unconscious persons are unavoidably irresponsible to the whole, and in conflict with their own being. They live in a divided world of shifting values and colliding circumstances. They have no control over their destiny and no discovered life purpose. For such unevolved people, to have to live under the simple summary justice of the karmic law, and to have to face knowingly the circumstances of their daily life as reflecting their own inner state of truth, would be a terrifying and unjustly cruel imposition. So the eternal justice or wisdom itself protects the world and the great bulk of its population from direct knowledge of the law. The protection lies in their combined ignorance. They know nothing about the law, nor do they desire to know. They can't perceive it for themselves, and if it is explained to them, they can't hear it, or they ridicule it. In short, it does not exist for them. In their ignorance, they are innocent before the law, but because of that ignorance, are unable to be freed by the law. Furthermore, they are shielded from the law's devastating implication, which I am now going to reveal to you. This, to the ignorant and unconscious people of the world, is the unbearable truth, and for everyone It is the most difficult thing in life to have to face up to. Here it is. I, the individual man or woman, am responsible for all the circumstances of my life. As I am within, so is my life. If my circumstances are painful, I am doing it. No one is to blame but I. So long as I continue to pursue a divided existence, independent or ignorant of the law of life, I will feel incomplete, unfulfilled, restless, and discontented. To the extent that I am being true to myself, present in every moment, I am controlling what happens to my person. I am being responsible, and the circumstances of my life will combine to work towards harmony, the right, and the good. There is no fate, accident, or chance which can alter my circumstances. Only I, who must change them by changing myself within. I am the circumstances of my life. That is the unbearable truth of the law of life. As you will see, it leaves you no room for self-delusion or escape. In other words, no time. Time, as something that separates us from events in the past or future, is the dream, the unconsciousness that we escape into to avoid the truth of our lives or ourselves now. You are either true now, or you are not. You cannot be true yesterday or tomorrow. There is no right and wrong. There is only right, which is to be true now. There is no good and bad, only good, which is to be true now. And there is no one or anything to be true to, only this moment, this everlasting moment of oneself within, which is the true and the truth. Although all the unconscious people of the earth must remain oblivious to the justice of the karmic law, they cannot escape its overall effect, which is the circumstances of the world itself. Here the law, as the condition of the world, works itself out very slowly from one life sequence or dream to another. That which is not faced up to in one sequence, or in any moment, must be faced up to in the next, or the next, or the next, until the truth of the law finally becomes the living truth of oneself, the being, and one awakes. This is the reality of time and existence. This is karma. The law of life says that no human being is more special than any other. All are equal. Or alternatively, all are special and therefore all are still equal. And yet existence shows us that all are not equal. At every level, the rich, the privileged, the sleek and the healthy enjoy a very special position not available to all. Where is the truth and justice of the law in this? The truth, according to the law, is that every person in existence is special because every single one possesses more than some other person somewhere. The fact that some have more than others for a time is irrelevant. Even she or he who has the least, says the law, still has more than nothing, so is still special. To exist is to possess something, even if it is only a body, Less than that is to have nothing, and that is to be dead. The law of life also says that in existence you get nothing for nothing. Everything has to be paid for. Without exception, everyone must pay, because no one is special. And without exception, everyone is paying. To be in existence, to live, is to pay. Everyone is paying today in the circumstances of their lives for what they received in the past. And what they are receiving today, as other circumstances in their lives, if not already earned, will have to be paid for in the future, in time. Thus, for everyone who comes and goes on the earth, does the supreme justice work timelessly in time. All payment due under the law of life is made in time having to be spent in existence. Time is the currency of being in existence, as money is the currency of living in existence. Whatever is owed must be paid for here on the earth sooner or later. That payment, at any time, appears as the difficult circumstances and problems in one's life. And the ultimate payment on earth at any time is made with one's body, death. When you call on the law of life for justice by facing up to the truth of yourself at any moment, you ask for an immediate accounting. You ask to be shown the balance between what you have received in the matter troubling you and what you have given, or between what you are paying now and what is due. You are not asking to be judged on any other matter, only this one, which is your immediate problem now. You can only face up to one problem in any moment, and that is always the one causing you the greatest pain or awareness now. By appealing direct to life through being brave enough to take conscious, responsible action, you cut out time and enter the present, or the presence of the truth of yourself, and you are given an immediate assessment or reckoning. The balance owing either way will soon manifest for you to observe for yourself as new circumstances in your life. There is no greater justice or truth than this. It is self-evident and it is unerring. It is the mystery, the secret and truth that all philosophies and religions have tried to find or express. If you are true in what you are doing, the circumstances will be helpful. But if you are not being as true as you could be, which means you are owing, you may get ill, suffer even a mild illness that normally you would not have considered significant. You may lose some money, have a fierce or exhausting emotional argument, or go through a period of severe frustration, depression or uncertainty to do with your work, partner, housing, or family. The improvements or difficulties often appear immediately, but they may also not surface for days, weeks, or even months. The time lag can be considerable. Also, for the individual starting to wake up and become more conscious, the delays can be increased by old habitual emotions reasserting themselves and causing bouts of resentment, anger, and sullen resistance to the working of the law. Usually, there is some catching up to do. After facing up to one problem, you find another you've ignored. Each involves a separate accounting, until you've faced or accounted for them all. But the merit is, you are no longer making more problems for yourself as normal unconscious living does. You are reducing them and renewing yourself at the same time. As you persevere, you will realize more and more that you are actually living under the law as a way of life, or as a way of love, and that its timeless, faultless justice is working in you and for you. Your life is clearer, cleaner. You are more in charge. You could never return to the old way again. For the massed population of the earth that cannot be responsible for itself as you the individual can, the karmic account runs on and on without a balance ever being able to be struck. This is the never-never world of living on borrowed time. Its blatant disregard for the justice of who really owes whom and who really owes what creates the vicious injustice or imbalance that never stops growing between the poor and the rich, the handicapped and the strong, the starving and the sleek, the deprived and the privileged. So appallingly ill-balanced has it all become that only the end of time itself, which is now approaching, can settle the account. Even so, even until then, it is all impeccably just. It is all a matter of time. All are paying in time, or will have to pay in time. None can escape what is due to him or her, as none can be denied. Since there is no one to take responsibility for the world, or because no one is able to take responsibility for such a dreadful mass of injustice, the karmic adjustments are made automatically from one generation to another, as the endless alternating pains and gains of existence. Owing to the enormous time lag caused by the massed unconsciousness of what is happening, the debts and reimbursements due to any generation fall on other generations yet to be born. And so it is said that the sins of the fathers shall fall upon the sons. Any immediate justice gained through isolated individuals being responsible or true to themselves soon disappears into the chaos and confusion of the whole, an entire world failing to be responsible for itself, its people, its planet. Nonetheless, even in the chaos, the law dispenses its timeless, chaotic justice. What is due lags behind what is paid. Justice lags behind injustice. And every person, without exception, suffers in time. For the masses, there is no freedom from the ignorance of the world and themselves. No liberation. Only the individual can escape. You are the individual. In truth, you are the only individual. For only you can know if you are being true in any moment. The essential characteristic of individuality is to know what is true at any time. Each individual is at a certain evolutionary point of consciousness. Consciousness is awareness of the truth of yourself or of life. Anyone hearing this recording right through will have developed to a certain stage of consciousness. To a less developed person, it will seem meaningless. However, as consciousness or truth cannot really vary or have degrees, when we talk of developing consciousness in people, it is more accurate to say that each individual is at a certain evolutionary stage of being less ignorant or less unconscious. Because you have listened this far, because you are real and serious enough to be able to hear the truth of life, your life, you have reached a certain point of consciousness, and you are now answerable to the karmic law. Whatever your reaction is to what I have just said, you have no choice. You can't run away or opt out. It is already done under the law. Like it or not, you are now responsible for yourself. And every time you perceive yourself being irresponsible, you will know it. As never before, you now control the circumstances of your life. How conditions unfold and affect you from now on will depend increasingly on how true you are being to yourself. It is a mighty moment and one to be uplifted by. The law of life's eternal justice is that no one can come under its conscious control until all the implications and consequences have been explained to them, or until they perceive the truth of it through their own experience. In other words, no one is responsible under the law for what they do not know. Knowledge is responsibility, and now you know. Furthermore, you now have the power to help you to be true as never before, even though you may not realize it immediately. This power comes from the energy of your new self-knowledge, your knowledge of the law as I have explained it. You and the law are one, although you may not know that yet either. Whenever you have the opportunity to be true, or more true to yourself, this energy will rise up in your consciousness to remind you. How swiftly and often you notice the reminder will depend on your diminishing inner resistance to the truth, your reducing independence or forgetfulness of the law. This independence is deeply ingrained in everyone as the ignorance and unconsciousness of the human race, until the individual is able to rise above it in himself or herself by being true every moment without effort. From now on, if ever you are not being true to yourself, if you are aware of it and persist in it, you will automatically draw to yourself the circumstances to make you more responsible and true in that area. Invariably, these are self-corrective or painful. The justice of the law is such that in time, you will actually see yourself creating difficult circumstances in yourself or perpetuating them. The main barrier to truth is fear, plus the desire to remain physically comfortable and emotionally secure, even though these particular conditions are constantly making you unhappy. Remember, what continues to trouble you is what you are not facing up to, and are in fact running from. In any situation, you can do no more than your best. It is the awareness, the growing consciousness of the need to be true for truth's sake and no other, that counts. Failure does not matter. You must not dwell on the past. There will be no shortage of opportunities to try again. Life will see to that, as life will also ensure that you succeed more and more until eventually you perceive the wonder of the law working with precision in your life. As you begin to work the miracle of controlling circumstances as yourself. Existence is ignorance or unconsciousness in motion. And the purpose of it is to make the individual man or woman more conscious. This is done through the karmic process of death and rebirth, which for the masses is the unending cycle of time or existence. For only through ignorance or what is false, that is, through the person that you think you are but are not, can the individual being that you really are ever perceive the truth of itself. In other words, you have to be an ignorance in person in order to emerge from ignorance as your individual conscious self or true being. But you must be clear as to what death and rebirth is, and not mix it up with popular notions that the person or masses have of it today. For instance, reincarnation, as it is discussed and understood in the world, is not the truth. Reincarnation is a doctrinal falsehood, a reasonable attempt to give integrity to the continued existence of ignorance as a way of life. In other words, reincarnation is the doctrine of ignorance playing for time in the future, so that it won't have to face up to being true to life in the present. The only death and rebirth for you, the individual, is now. This moment is your only incarnation. You can only be incarnate, in the flesh, now, as you can only be true, now. If you quit a situation or a person in order to be true to yourself, it will be now, not tomorrow. In that moment and all the other moments of your daily life, when you have the opportunity to be true or not true, you either die to be true, or you do not die to be true. You either die in that moment to the person that you are, die to the ignorance that you are holding on to or compromising with as yourself, or you don't. If you die to that personal self, which means you face up to the falsehood of it, you are immediately reborn, instantly freed of that part of the old person or false self that you were. If you don't die to it, you continue to live on as the same old person, the same old wearying problem you can't escape from. The person is the only problem. Getting the person to the point of dying, however, is unpleasant, uncomfortable, difficult or painful, as everyone knows who has had to be brave and true and face up to themselves in a crisis. But the release, the blessed cleansing energy that comes from being straight and new, is unmistakable. Only fear, the fear of dying now to what you are used to, stands in the way. Only fear dies. The process of dying and rebirth is the same, whether you die psychologically, emotionally, or physically. Something dies within you. It is you, but it is not you. Your attention is focused on that within. You feel the dying. You don't see it, imagine it, or think about it. It is intensely, though very finely, agitating, disturbing, distressing, painful, not unlike the after effects of a wasp or bee sting, or the high-pitched onset of a dose of flu. You watch without seeing, acutely aware as you endeavor to perceive, whether through the confusion of psychological death, through the pain of emotional death, or through the incredible, palpable blackness of physical death. At the moment of dying, the physical body, which at all other times seems so unquestionably you, together with all notions about reincarnation or any other topic, is completely irrelevant to you, has no reality at all. Death is death. There is nothing like it. Even though you die 10,000 times, which developing consciousness or evaporating ignorance must, you can't remember death. If you do, you only think you do, and what you remember is still a part of living, of holding on notionally, not death itself. In death you grow in being, not in information. Death is always the first time. Each death is new, for death is now. Ignorance lives in the past and fears the now, the present which is death to it. Unless you die continuously to your notional self while you are living, you will always fear death as it is approaching. You will hold on, and you will be distressed, disturbed, or pained in your unhappiness. Death exists only for the living ignorance that must die. When the ignorance dies, life is, and you feel and know you are reborn. Remember, death in all its facets is the process of being made true, by being made to face up to the parts of yourself that you have conveniently ignored or excused in the past. Remember, death always takes place inside the physical body, within, where there is no physical body, only feeling, sensation or presence, and no thought. In that brief moment, even though you may still be living in the body, you are out of existence. You have overcome the world and are out of time. In that brief moment, all your debts are paid. For reincarnation to have any meaning, there has to be a knowing self that continues from one life on earth, through death, to another life on earth. No such self exists. You, the person who assumes a past and future with all its problems, memories, fears, ideals and wants, ambitions, likes and dislikes, die with the body, and are never seen or heard of again. Nevertheless, your awareness and presence, they are one and the same, survives physical death. But that presence is never born again into another body. Only the body in its ignorance of that immortal reality of yourself is born. And that is not a return but a repetition, a gradual re-arising of the same ignorance which continues and will continue as long as I mistake or identify with the body as myself. When I, who am the awareness, the consciousness in the body, am no longer ignorant of my true self, the re-embodiment of my ignorance ceases. I realize that as my being is pure awareness, there is nothing to reincarnate, nothing to be born, and nothing to die. Ignorance begins with the notion, I am this body. It commences the moment my body is conceived in the womb. But the ignorance only starts to become personal, or painful, after this body is born, and I perceive other bodies or objects to be separate from it, separate from what I now regard as myself. Then, through infancy, my ignorance slowly develops into a knowledgeable person, I, who derive all my values, knowledge and unhappiness, from the erroneous identification with the body. Would you please test this for yourself? What is your problem, your deepest worry? It derives from your identification with the body, your person. Hence the person, because it has no awareness of its true self or presence, which is beyond problems and death, is ignorance personified. The person is the cause of all suffering. Yet the person, like all its problems and frustrations, is completely false, as unreal as the notion of the feathers of an elephant. Just as there can be no feathers of an elephant, apart from the frustrating notion of such a thing, there is no person, apart from the person's frustrating notion of himself or herself. The person is the illusion, the surmise, that grows out of the elephant, the body. Since the person is unreal, whatever the person conceives is as unreal and inevitably troublesome as itself. Consequently, everything personal in existence, being unreal, perishes. That includes the body, out of which the bogus person arose in the first place, and without which the person and all its problems simply vanishes. To make all this clearer, I'm going to show you in your own experience how ignorance is conceived. I'm going to take you back into the womb where it all started, where the body itself arises. For this we won't need a psychiatrist, a hypnotist, or any other kind of expert. We need only the truth and your impersonal awareness. Anything additional will be purely the delusion of the person. We will proceed very slowly. As we do, see if you recognize the truth of what I am saying. For it is the truth of yourself. Come with me step by step. Examine every word in your own experience at that moment. Don't analyze. Just relax, listen, and be. And after you've heard what I'm going to say, listen to it over and over again, until you start to perceive the wonder of what it all means. This will happen naturally, without any effort or trying, as long as you keep listening. For what you begin to perceive or reunite with will be your true self, the eternal awareness and presence that is always there when the person, the striving, doubting problem maker, is not. It is undeniable, is it not, that you are life? And is it not true that the life you are now, not the person or the body, is already in the womb before conception and at conception? In other words, life in every instance before conception is in the womb. Without life, the womb cannot conceive. Life is always present before any form of life appears. Even today, you frequently have this experience of life before the body. But the mind, the ignorant person, glosses over it. And so it's lost. Let me show you. Life, with its extraordinary quality of pure awareness, is often experienced as you are waking up from sleep in the morning, before you come to realize you've got a body and start associating with the problems of the day. What is that awareness, which is indisputably you before your body consciousness, your problems, come to mind? it is life. You, which is always present before any form of life, any body, including your own body, appears. The awareness, the life in you, is there first, fully aware. If you think you haven't had this experience, you will now before long. When it happens, just be very still and observe without thinking. Let me give you another example of yourself as pure life or awareness. This occurs when you wake up with a start out of a sound sleep, and for a split second don't know where you are or who you are. Yet you are acutely aware of being aware, extremely alert and present. There is no knowledge of anybody or anything. Who or what is that awareness? That pure consciousness which is without knowledge or knowing, before experience rushes in. It is life, you, before the body, before conception. Where there is no life, there is no awareness, no waking up, no experience, and no conception. And where there is no conception, there is no body. You, life, are first, before conception, before the body, and before the idea of the body's form. In short, before you come to your senses. This life, this awareness and presence which you are, now, behind the concept of your body, is your being. Or more simply, life is being behind the body. Without realizing it, you spend half your life in the fullness and completeness of this state, in dreamless sleep. Dreamless sleep, when you are your true self without any body or person, is the most consistently perfect thing in your life. Each day you seek it and look forward to it with unfailing relish. The reason you think that in dreamless sleep you are not aware and fulfillingly conscious is because in the moment you think about it, you're already awake and identified with the body and the person. The body and the person have no direct knowledge of life itself. They are external to life. They know only forms of life, life perceived through the senses, and forms of life are not life. Life is always within. In dreamless sleep, where your awareness is one with life, one with your true being, all forms have disappeared, including your body and your person. Yet when you awake, you still know you slept soundly. How do you know you slept soundly, if there is no awareness of being in that state? The answer, of course, is that you do know, don't you? It is knowledge without form, pure knowledge, self-knowledge. If anyone tried to deny that you slept soundly, they would never convince you, because you know it as yourself. You are aware of being, even though you can't remember it. It's amazing, isn't it, when you look at it? By saying you slept soundly, you acknowledge having had continuous awareness of undisturbed, unconditioned being, or life. You acknowledge an indescribable continuity of the being of yourself, which in your waking condition you can still actually appreciate as something non-existent, yet undeniably positive and desirable. real. Deep, dreamless sleep is simply the total negation and disappearance of your false identification with the body and the person. You then recover or return to your natural awareness of the presence of life, your true self or being, as you were before conception in the womb. To bring that state of dreamless sleep or preconception into your awareness while you are alive and awake is the ultimate self-knowledge, self-realization. The word conception, or to conceive, as you probably have noticed, has two apparently different meanings. One is to receive or be pregnant with a baby or embryo physical body. The other is to receive or be pregnant with an idea or notion. By you and I now looking at the conception of the body in the womb, we can see for ourselves how the two meanings, the physical and the abstract, actually describe what happens at the instant of conception. The body is the initial object through which life comes into existence. This occurs at the moment of conception in the womb. The question is, who or what conceives the body? The womb doesn't conceive. Conception merely occurs in the womb. So who or what conceives the body? Life does. You, life, the being behind the womb, conceive your own body and your own existence. You do this in the womb, or through the womb where all life originates, by identifying with the first potentially complete human form, a fertilized egg, that enters your awareness. This fertilized egg or embryo, you receive, conceive, and give life to by perceiving through its incipient senses of feeling. The effect is much the same as today when you can look at a totally lifeless photograph of someone you love and by identifying with the photo, experience your love of the person through it, although clearly the image has no life outside yourself, outside of what you are giving it. So in the womb you provide the embryo with your beingness by conceiving it as the feeling of yourself. And at the same time you give it life and identity by conceiving it as I, your notion of yourself as that feeling. This is the fundamental error of human existence. From this all error, all ignorance arises. The body you have assumed in the womb and the equally false notion that I am this body are now gestating, that is, swelling and growing as forms of life, forms of yourself, which are not yourself. Fertilization, the bond or union of male and female matter, is the magnet that draws unlimited life and being into limited individual existence. Whereas previously your awareness was endless, undisturbed being or bliss without object or subject, there is now the body object and I the subject. Existence has begun for you. From now on, that form and its existence are your life. After conception, the first sense of awareness I, the embryo, have is of the utter warmth, comfort, and congeniality of the womb. Nearing the end of 9 months, I am addicted to this perfection, this seemingly complete, self-sustaining feeling existence. I, my feeling body, and my world, the womb, are in almost total harmony. Body and world are one. At birth, as I am pushed out of my mother's body, this unity is violently shattered. The warmth, comfort, and effortless peace of the womb vanish. I am plunged into cold space and discomfort. The change is profoundly disturbing. It produces an awareness of insecurity, unwantedness, first feelings of fusion, self. There is the immediate sensuality, their immediate sensuality, I the body, and that which is not my body, the impinging style around my body, the impinging hostile surrounding conditions. For the first time I am conscious of lack. Lack of the perfection of warmth and comfort that was inseparable from myself. I am woeful. I know longing. And gradually, I know pain. I want what I had, the past, what I was and felt in the womb, my original perception of myself as the sense of warmth, comfort, and peace. I am frustrated. I now know the feeling of frustration. I want something other than what I have or am, and can do nothing about it. I am helpless, isolated, bewilderingly alone, incredibly lonely. My body cries. It cries for warmth and comfort, the succor, security, and enfolding presence of the moist and gentle womb. But this is gone forever. From this moment on, all my life, I will identify with, or name as love, any condition able to reproduce in me feelings or impressions similar to those I knew in the womb. I will love anything or anyone whose presence arouses these responses in me. And my whole life will be a constant endeavor to acquire and hold on to those things and people. But in this I will always fail or be disappointed. For the only way I can have the love and union I crave is by returning to or re-entering the physical womb. This I will later attempt to do through the brief palliative of physical sex. I will then identify sex with love and make yet another error. I will identify love with any condition, person, or thing that provides even a degree of that sense of original warmth, peace, or comfort of the womb, which I can never hope to find again outside myself. After leaving the womb, my first real awareness of love is my mother. O doctors and nurses delivering me to her, please embrace my body firmly with your warm skin, secure arms, and goodwill. My mother's nipple in my mouth, the warmth and succor of her milk flowing into my body, and the warmth and smell of her flesh outside me, provide a sense of reassurance, an incipient appreciation of love, of some sort of return to what I had known. So through my strange new senses, I begin to project myself further out from my body, attaching to her through smell, touch, feeling, and taste, as transient substitutes for the contentment I knew. But could anything ever replace the effortless warmth, comfort, and security of the womb, where there was no need of any object apart from myself? No. Only death, perhaps, which in my greatest misery as I grow older in the body I will sometimes wish for. My newfound love or identity with my mother's body, my sense of being and belonging, is continually interrupted. I cry. I learn how to cry and when to cry, to try to bring some love into this weird alien existence, until even crying becomes a kind of perverse comfort against the sense of loss and pain. I cry not so much out of discomfort, but for what I feel I have lost. It will always be like that from now on. So I will live this life crying and trying to bring about the impossible, to materialize that which I left in the womb. As this is impossible while I think I am the body, I will never be happy or contented for long, until I die. Such is the fate of ignorance. This tape ends here. You will notice how little you can recall of what you've heard. This is because the truth cannot be remembered. It has to be discovered new every moment. I suggest you play the tape over and over. Don't try to work it out. The truth is energetic, not just words. All you have to do to receive it is listen, as often as you can.